The following is an exclusive presentation of WI Garden Media, the voice of Garden Talk Radio.
Coming up on the program today, we're going to discuss some garden myths, as well as the world of homemade bread. Our guest is no-till expert Jesse Frost will be with us, and we'll answer your garden questions. The hour is full, so join us.
You are listening to the most informationally packed hour of garden-focused radio in the country and on the internet with your host, husband and wife team Joey and Holly Baird. This is the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show.
And welcome to another edition of the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show. Happy you've taken part in allowing us to be part of your day. I'm your host, Joey Baird. Beside me is my wife, co-host, best friend, and gardening partner,
Holly Baird.
This program is for you, about you, to help your garden grow better, to maintain your landscape, grow healthier trees, make your grass look greener, as well as preserving what you grow. You want to be part of the program in addition to just listening to it? We appreciate that. Whether you're tuning in on one of the 20 AM and FM frequencies broadcasting our program here in 2023 through our radio app, through our parent website, which is thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com, underneath the Season 7 tab at the top of the page, in-studio video replay or podcast replay, you can send us an email to gardentalkradio@gmail.com. That's gardentalkradio@gmail.com. Or you can give us a call anytime, 24/7, 365, at toll-free 1-800-927-SHOW. That's toll-free coast-to-coast, 1-800-927-7469. We're going to get in the program here, Holly, and discuss garden myths. And garden myths are very popular. The act of these activities are popular, even though they have been debunked by science, good science, and people continue to do such.
Right. So it's a common problem that people follow these myths because, you know, somebody told them that it worked and maybe something else worked, but...
And somebody you love told you this and you continue to do such even though it's been proven that it doesn't work. And maybe you're not aware that it doesn't work, and that's fine. We're going to enlighten you in these several of these acts.
Right. So the first one is...
Potato tower.
Potato tower, which is probably... I want to say maybe your favorite garden myth.
The concept or the premise of a potato tower is a 2-foot by 2-foot square box that's about 4 foot tall. It's got poles on all four corners, and you plant the potatoes in the lower on the ground. You cover it with soil, and then as the potato grows, you fill in or you attach the outer board. Some people leave all the boards intact, and then as the potato grows internally inside the box, they continue to cover it over. Because the thought process is that as long as the potato is growing, the longer the vine, the more potatoes that vine will produce, and by keeping it confined, the thing on the internet, you'll get 100 pounds of potatoes in 4 square feet. Now, potatoes do come in determinate, indeterminate varieties, but that doesn't mean if you have a 17-foot-long potato stalk that there will be potatoes growing on every square inch of that vine. It just simply is not possible by nature. It is a predetermined amount of potatoes based on the conditions in which is set forth for that potato to produce. You will see hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of videos when you go online to YouTube and search potato tower building, how to build one. And that everything I just told you is the same. We're going to get 100 pounds of potatoes in this box, and as they grow, you continue to backfill, and all the potatoes are all that. You will find zero videos online of 100 pounds of potatoes. You'll find many videos online where the quantity of potatoes harvested is very minimal, almost exactly the same amount of potatoes that was planted. And they give certain, you know, oh, well, this is probably why this happened, and this is why that happened. Potatoes are not designed that way. That's why you don't see commercial growers, and commercial growers are in the business to produce as much as possible, to ship out as much as possible, to make as much money as possible. If it was doable and feasible and it worked, you would not see fields of potatoes. You would see boxes of potatoes that would produce 100 pounds a box, and they would be producing millions of pounds of potatoes in a field. Instead of burying them, they would have boxes in them. Pine needles, Holly.
So the theory is that pine needles are acidic, and if you add them to your soil or your compost or use them as mulch, that they will add too much acid or increase the acidity in your compost garden, what have you. And they make great mulch.
They do.
And also, I think that slugs don't like them, if I remember correctly.
Hit and miss.
But they don't add, because of the process of them, between them falling off the tree.
On the tree, they're 3.5 up approximately acidity.
Right, and then when they fall off, it's about 0.5, I think.
By the time they fall and they decompose, they neutralize. And you don't have that acidity in the soil at all. So, yes, you can make great mulch. If you include them into your compost bin, you don't want to add more than 10% of the overall volume because of the length of time it takes to break down. But there is no scientific-based method that shows that, oh, we put them in the soil, and the soil changed to an acidity, and now we can grow blueberries here. That just doesn't work. Doesn't work.
It's not how it works. It's not true. And
if you don't like science, go off of nature.
Right. Well, okay. Anyway, so science
and
nature.
And some of you may have been doing some of these and continue to do these, and it doesn't work. And if you think that it works, it's not working. Because there's no, you can't take pine needles and put them in the soil and make the soil change unless you're adding additional elements in order to make that soil change a different pH.
Absolutely correct. So that's one myth, or another myth, or second myth.
We got like 7 shows here, but we're only going to pick some of these.
We gave a whole hour presentation on many of these. Yeah. So the other one, or next one, is blossom and rot myths. So blossom and rot is on tomatoes, and it's when you go to pick your tomato.
Well, it's on a lot of plants, but we're focusing on the tomato aspect here.
It's when you go to pick your tomato, and you look at the bottom, and it's brownish,
it's all black.
Blackish. Like, it just looks like it's rotten, essentially, and that's what the rot is blossom and rot. And so some people have theories about this.
But what is it? First of all, what is really occurring? And then we'll go over what some of these myths are.
Sure. So what's occurring is that the tomato plant has a lack of access to calcium. And so with that, it causes that blossom and rot.
It can't develop.
Yeah, it can't develop properly.
So it's shorted what it needs. So it just kind of uses what it's got and doesn't have enough.
Right. And so that's when the blossom end rot happens. And so what happens is that a lot of people say, you know, add Epsom salt, add XYZ, or at the time of planting, people do things as well. And we'll get to that in a second here. But what happens is that once you water the plant, because you're adding Epsom salt or adding something, and then you water it in, it releases that calcium into the plant and it takes care of the problem.
Now, there is a 1% chance in some parts of the country that you are lacking calcium. But for the rest of us, we have more than enough calcium than we know what to do with in our soil. And the soil is too dry, the plant can't get it up and access it, and that's why we have these problems. So, yeah, Epsom salt. People use Epsom salt. Oh, but Epsom salt is magnesium sulfate. The plant is a lack of calcium. You go to your periodic table. You can't make one work the other. Doesn't work that way.
No.
People will add Tums or powdered milk at the time of planting. Now, those both have calcium in it, but you're wasting your time. Just have a consistent amount of moisture in your plants. Drip irrigation system from dripworks.com. However you're watering, as long as you keep the soil damp, you're going to be fine. You're not going to have problems with your blossom end rot issues. It's when you have really dry conditions and you're not watering and the plants are trying to develop. That's when it happens. You want to go ahead, and if you see that in the early stages, remove those tomatoes so the plant's not putting energy out trying to develop tomatoes that don't have the necessary availability to develop correctly. It will not, if you start watering when you see that, it's not going to fix the problem currently, but you remove those damaged tomatoes and it will greatly decrease the opportunity to have blossom end rot the next growth. The tomatoes take about 20 to 30 days. Each flower cluster, a flower will take 30 days to have a tomato.
Right. Correct. So, yeah. So that's another myth that we have. And we talked about those. And then other one is three sisters planting, and that the bean portion of the three sister planting will feed the corn nitrogen.
Corn is extremely heavy feeder of nitrogen, and beans do not produce. They produce nitrogen for themselves. The procedure of the three sisters method is to utilize the corn, which is the stalk, which is the trellis for the bean, and the squash to cover the soil to reduce evaporation for the bean and the corn and the squash. That's where your three sisters comes in. Nothing more, nothing else. That's what it is.
Right. That's exactly what it is. And you can use like a cover crop to add nitrogen to your soil, but it takes a much longer process than just one season where theoretically the beans are feeding the corn. That's not how it works.
One more. Adding sugar makes your tomatoes sweeter. Yes, people do this.
I cannot believe people do this, but there's no science there.
You can't chemically alter the sweetness of a tomato.
No.
It's a variety.
It's a variety. Yeah, that's all there is to it. There's sweeter varieties. There's more acidic varieties. Adding sugar to your soil probably is attracting some pests, possibly.
Bees.
Bees.
Wasps.
But
mice. I don't know.
Who knows? Gophers.
More problems than if you just left the sugar in the house.
And it's obviously a waste of resources, money, whatever. So don't do that either.
So do you have a garden myth, or do you have a practice in your garden that you don't know if it's really beneficial? Send it on over to gardentalkradio@gmail.com and we will confirm or deny your practice and whether you should continue to do such. What you should continue to do as listeners, and Walton's Inc. has heard this, and that's why they're returning next year for their fourth consecutive year on the program, is Walton's Inc. has everything but the meat.
Yeah, so Walton's, we know you care about where your meat comes from. Definitely your canning, preserving your fruits and vegetables. At Walton's, you can get all the equipment, seasoning, and supplies to make sausage, jerky, and any other meat products your way to your high standards. Do you want to make snack sticks that people will actually like? Walton's created MeatJustSticks.com, an informational site to help you make the best finished product. They have their full line of meat grinders, mixers, sausage stuffers to help you go from animal to edible. Walton's everything but the meat. If you use code GROW50 to save 10% off your orders of $50 or more at WaltonsInc.com.
When we come back, it's the wonderful world of homemade bread. You're tuned in to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show.
Have a garden question? Give Joey and Holly a call now or anytime 24/7. Just dial 1-800-927-SHOW. If you can't get through, leave a message and they will call you back. Call now 1-800-927-SHOW.
Gripsticks produces American-made products with sleek designs and quality materials. Based and manufactured in Utah, they have high-quality and durable products that last a lifetime. They're built beyond tough. Their wool socks come from Rocky Mountain-sourced materials, are soft and comfortable, keep your feet warm and dry, and come with a lifetime guarantee. Even for the most sensitive toes, these socks are made for everyone. High-quality wool socks make a huge difference for happy feet. They fit in with all the many things you do from around the house to the outdoors and beyond. They are comfortable and long-lasting. These socks are great for gardening because they keep your feet so comfortable no matter the conditions outside. It's hard to overstate how amazing these feel to have warm, dry feet as you work in your garden. Designed and manufactured in-house for the best results and quality every time. When you purchase from Gripsticks, you're supporting long life cycle products and American-made manufacturing. Check out their belts, wallets, and socks at grip6.com. Use coupon code RADIO15 to save 15% off your order at grip6.com. Pomona's Universal Pectin is a high-quality pectin that gels reliably with low amounts of any sweetener. If you're trying to reduce the amount of sugar in your diet, you'll love Pomona's Universal Pectin. Now you can make healthy homemade jams and jellies sweetened to your taste. You can use sugar or honey to sweeten. Pomona's Universal Pectin keeps indefinitely when stored in an airtight container. Easy to use, versatile, and comes with directions and recipes in every box. Find out more and where to buy at PomonaPectin.com. Also available at natural food stores and online.
Jung Seed Company is a family-owned and operated gardening company since 1907, with the largest selection of seeds and plants online. Use coupon code 10TG23 to receive 10% off your order at JungSeeds.com. Again, that coupon code is 10TG23. Wisconsin Greenhouse Company has custom-made greenhouses to suit your needs. grow year-round. Strongest greenhouses that will last a lifetime. From agricultural to lounging to entertaining. For more information, go to WisconsinGreenhouseCompany.com.
Get ready for winter with Chapin Home and Garden Products. Weed, feed, and seed your lawn with Chapin turf spreaders before the snow flies. Have a salt spreader ready to go for keeping walkways and driveways clear of ice. And make sure you have sprayers handy for cleaning, disinfecting, and watering indoor plants. Chapin products are available at major home improvement hardware retailers, online retailers, and at ChapinMFG.com.
Happy Leaf LED grow lights are USA made in small batches for outstanding performance and long run cost effectiveness. 5-year warranty and VIP customer service. Grow happy at HappyLeafLED.com. Use coupon code JOEYHOLLY to get 10% off any order over $90 at HappyLeafLED.com.
When a family of fruit flies accompanies the fresh fruits and vegetables from your garden, you need Rescue Fruit Fly Traps. Rescue Fruit Fly Traps use a food-grade lure that fruit flies can't resist, and thanks to their no-tip design, you won't have to worry about spills on your kitchen counters. Get rid of fruit flies fast with Rescue Fruit Fly Traps. Made in the USA by the makers of the popular Rescue Fly and Yellow Jacket Traps. Learn more at rescue.com. That's R-E-S-C-U-E.com.
The Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show is brought to you by the following. Dripworks, Rise Gardens, Grip Six, Bloomin' Easy, Fleet Farm, Walton's Incorporated, Blue Ribbon Organics, Tree Diaper. Find all sponsors at theWisconsinVegetableGardener.com and thank them for their support. Welcome back to the Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show. The world of homemade breads, Holly. But first, Farmer's Defense.
Farming garden in the ultimate comfort, Farmer's Defense has a lightweight and durable sleeves made to protect you against the elements while farming. Farmer's sleeves offer unparalleled protection of arms and skins for any farmer, gardener, or outdoor worker. Say goodbye to irritated skin and sunburns in the garden. Their sleeves offer cooling comfort protection against the elements outdoors. An alternative to thick clothing, Farmer's Defense is made of wicking material with UBF protection factor of 50 plus to protect you from allergens and scratches. To find other great products and more, visit farmersdefense.com.
So, you want to make your homemade bread? It's starting to get to winter or cold times. You can do that. You can do that by hand or a bread machine. And there's a lot of different variations to making homemade bread.
One of the biggest things is understanding the basic science of homemade bread.
Okay.
So if you're making regular gluten bread, and we'll talk about gluten, non-gluten, gluten-free, whatever, we'll talk about that later. But regular homemade bread, you want to use bread flour versus all-purpose flour. Not saying that if you use all-purpose flour, your bread's not going to turn out. Might be a little bit more dense and not rise as much as what you want. But bread flour has a higher amount of protein, and that protein allows for the bread to bind a little bit better. It allows to have it so that it holds up to the kneading and the rising process. And it also provides that spring back action that bread has.
It makes the bread the way you remember bread being made.
Yes. So that's important. So that's one part, is if you are going to make bread, we highly recommend using bread flour versus all purpose, because it's important. But if you're just like, hey, I'm just hanging around a Sunday afternoon, I don't want to go to the store and make some bread, you can use all-purpose flour. That's perfectly fine.
Now, we won't get into, but there's bean flour and there's pumpkin flour, and there's all the other types of flour that you can use for multiple things. But when it comes to bread, we're just going with bread flour.
Right.
Okay.
So, yes. And then you want to use yeast and water as well. So basically, homemade bread consists of flour, yeast, water, sometimes sugar, sometimes olive oil, sometimes.
And whatever accessories you want to throw
honey,
in.
Honey, yeah.
Like if you're going to make raisin bread or something like that.
That's a little bit different, but yeah.
And zucchini bread, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah. So.
And the yeast, make sure it's not expired, because yeast does have an expiration. It's a live thing.
Yeast is a live thing. So you want to keep that in mind as well.
And it doesn't work very good when it's expired.
No, that's very true.
It's a sad
experience. And you want to let your yeast bloom, or whatever you want to call it, while it, you add the warm water and the sugar.
110 degrees or at 110 degrees for, 5 minutes, and then you can watch it start activating.
Yeah, it activates. Yeah. And there's, quick yeast. There's regular yeast. So there are some options there as well. Just follow whatever recipe you have. So then, if you're not using yeast, you can do something like sourdough. Or also, I made ciabatta bread, and I created a what's called a mother starter. And so that was a 24-hour process of getting the yeast to kind of eat the flour and the sugar and activate. So it was a little bit different.
Well, the sourdough takes a long time, too, because you can just take regular flour and water and mix it together, and it takes time for it.
Well, these are two different things.
Right.
Okay. So sourdough is different than the ciabatta.
Ciabatta, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, so either way, they both consisted of what's called a mother, or a starter, which is when you, instead of using the yeast, you use a fermented flour and water mixture. And so that that creates the rise for you,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the yeast. So that's the sourdough. A lot of people like sourdough because it does have the beneficial...
Your body's able to break it down better than the traditional bread.
Right, and I think it's higher in protein, but I'm not sure. I'd have to look that one up. So that's the process. That's the basic science behind homemade bread.
And you can do challah breads as well.
Yeah, there's challah bread.
Yeah.
I don't know much about challah bread.
Well, it has a yeast, but it's more of a, I think it's a Jewish bread.
It is Jewish, yes. Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
I don't know the specific history or significance, but I've had it and it's very good.
Right, yeah.
But also if you do homemade bread right, no matter what you make, it's good.
Oh, it's really
good. Whenever you don't do it right and it becomes a brick that you put behind the hay wagon to keep it from rolling down a hill, that's when things are bad.
Yeah. That's when a lot of times you want to make sure that you are using the bread flour.
And it's a science, too. You're not just going to splash this, splash. If you want bread to come out right, you've got to follow the directions.
Exactly. It is trusting the process. It's following the process. It's taking the time. And there are books and recipes about how you can have homemade bread in 5, 15, 20 minutes a day, but there is still a setup process for that where you make the dough on one day and then you take off pieces of the dough to cook it. It's not something where, oh, I'm going to start this process now and it takes 5 minutes. That's not true.
Well, then you can also cook it in a Dutch oven.
Yeah, you can cook in a Dutch oven, a bread pan. Some people just will often shape the bread and then cook it on like a pizza stone type thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hit the word here, gluten-free, because gluten is a molecule? It's something. It's in the wheat.
It's a protein.
It's a protein in the wheat now that we may or may not have had 30 years ago, but they're altering the grains so rapidly now that the tech companies, in order to get more of a higher yield and all this. But gluten, the body cannot break down gluten properly. Is that what the deal is? And some people have the issue where it rejects the gluten altogether. It can't process it at all.
Yeah. So gluten is a protein that occurs in regular wheat and probably other things too, but I know mostly in wheat. And people who have celiac disease do have a high allergy to it, where they can get extremely sick.
That's why they have to go gluten-free hamburger buns and gluten-free all this stuff. I mean, it's extremely expensive. Those who unfortunately have to go that route.
Right.
It's a very costly dietary restriction.
And there are people who feel that if they cut gluten out, and even if they don't have celiac, they feel like they feel better. I'm not one of those people. My body is like, whatever, I don't care. But yeah.
We're not doctors. So
we're not doctors.
Talk to your doctor if you feel that there's an issue.
But I mean,
We have to put the disclaimer out there.
Not being a doctor, I did at one point, because I have PCOS, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome, I was advised by somebody who also has it to remove gluten from my body for 2 weeks and see what happens. And I didn't notice a difference. And I actually think I was like crabbier and hungrier. So
the lady hawk.
I need gluten.
Well, and it's because my body loves processed foods. Uh-huh. And even though you and I, we try to eat a more whole foods based diet, even any processed foods I eat, my body's like, that's cool, we're good. And so I don't think gluten affects me personally. There's other things that affect my digestive system, but gluten is not one of them. But I have heard, I mean, like one of my friend's parents, dad, he doesn't eat gluten because he cut it out and then he realized like he felt better, he felt less bloated, etc. Never found out if he had celiac or not, but sometimes people just have different reactions, and that's why modern medicine is kind of different, because we have all these things in our food, and sometimes it's like,
figure out the source and not the medicine to fix the problem.
Right.
But you, I mean, obviously homemade bread, without doing the scientific breakdown between store-bought and homemade bread, to me, is way, way better, healthier, because you've got like 6 ingredients. If you look on what's in this bread when you buy at the store, you have to say it's a novel. In some instances, there's things that you don't know what they are, and you don't want to look up what they are because it's scary what they put
then
in.
You know, you sit it on your counter and it lasts for like 6 weeks.
Well, yeah. Well, what was it? We bought a pre-made pizza from a big box store, and there was, 52 or 63 different ingredients in this pizza. Now, whenever anybody who's made homemade pizza at home, you got like 7 ingredients. That's it. You'd flour, water, dough, yeast, toppings. That's it. You don't have this gluten, this carbon, this dye. It's a whole mess. Quick breads.
So gluten, there's many alternatives to gluten flour. You can find even like a gluten-free flour mix for baking and things like that. There's a lot of different options now, probably, than there was even just like 3 years ago. Quick breads are things like zucchini bread, pumpkin bread, banana bread, apple bread. They're like a more of a dessert, like a cake
more
in a way. More sweet.
Okay.
And there's usually
still good.
Still good, still delicious, fresh. And there's usually not any sort of yeast involved. But they call them quick breads because a lot of times people will eat them for like breakfast or bring them to brunch parties or
I think
whatever.
Pumpkin bread is good no matter what time of day or night you eat it.
I agree.
Okay.
I like pumpkin bread.
2 a.m. Pumpkin bread. What's the difference?
You eat 2 a.m. snacks all the time when I'm passed out. Yeah. So, yeah. Guys.
More pumpkin bread, please.
So anyway.
Always have a good snack in the middle of the night.
Yeah. Whatever.
At some point, you're going to be up and you're going to be hungry.
I don't get up in the middle of the night, so I don't know. But
quick bread's an alternative to the gluten aspect. If
you can make gluten-free quick breads,
okay,
yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's something different. It's not It's not like a sandwich. You're not going to make quick bread. You're not going to make a quick bread sandwich,
right? A salami sandwich with quick bread. It's so savory. It's got the sweet and the saltiness. It's great. Right. I'm sure it's been done on the Food Network.
I'm sure it has.
This is the new age. We're going to do pumpkin salami bread or something.
People might like that.
Yeah,
zucchini bread would probably be okay with
some. The problem with it is it's so flaky. It's crumbly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It just falls apart in your hand and you got to eat it over a bucket. So,
are you eating stuff over buckets now?
I don't know. Some of that zucchini bread and pumpkin bread, you look at it and it crumbles.
Like,
yeah. But it's good, though.
It is good.
Well, summer is over, Holly, and the kids are back in school. The nights are cold and getting colder, and you have forgotten about your lawn, but there's something you have to do so you can enjoy your lawn next year.
Just because it's fall, we don't want to forget about our yards and those Japanese beetles either. They may be gone, but they're not far. Not only do they feast on your roses and berries this summer, they laid eggs in your turf so that they can start again next year. Take a stand with Phylum's Grub Gone. Grub Gone is a non-chemical BT granule that specifically targets scarab pests and their larvae. Simply apply the granule with spreader, irrigate it into the soil, and let the naturally occurring bacteria do its job.
The best part about it is that it's non-chemical choice. It's the only non-chemical choice that effectively controls grubs. Grub Gone, that is. And the best part about it, it's non-toxic to bees and other pollinators, so you don't have to worry about toxifying their hives. It's at grubgone.com or phylumbioproducts.com. Zero restrictions for around flowering plants. Again, phylumbioproducts.com. Or grubgone.com, the natural choice. Hang out with us moments away. No-till garden expert Jesse Frost will be with us. You're tuned in to the Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show.
Got a question for Joey and Holly? Send it via email anytime to gardentalkradio@gmail.com.
Need a new mattress? Choose Furlo over the other leading brands and save big, really big. Because, hey, nobody ever slept better for paying thousands more for basically the same mattress. Plus, with Furlo Mattress, you also get our exclusive lifetime comfort guarantee. Good for as long as you own your mattress. Comfort to comfort, dollars to dollars. Compare Furlo to the others, and it's obvious. You get more bed for your buck. Wake up. Sleep better. Furlo.
Blue Ribbon Organics, providing locally made organic compost and soil blends for gardeners, farms, landscaping, and more. To find our products nearest you, visit BlueRibbonOrganics.com.
Goodbye biting bugs and plant invaders. No More Bugs by Naturally Green Products is your answer. A product pioneered by the USDA in 14 years in business, No More Bugs has been a favorite by consumers across the country. More than a repellent, it is safe for you, your plants, pets, and home. Visit nomorebugs.net. Free shipping on orders over $50. Use code FREESHIP4ME.
Rootmaker starts your plants off right and keeps them going through harvest. From their seed starting trays with an innovative design that air prunes the roots to their large variety of grow bags, 1 to 60 gallons, their products will provide you the harvest you've never seen before. Visit rootmaker.com and use coupon code RADIO23 to save 15% off your order at rootmaker.com.
Garden like a pro in 3 easy steps and receive customized fertilizer recommendations for your garden or lawn. Soil Savvy helps you determine what nutrients your plants need to thrive. Never again overapply nutrients they don't need. A patented process that makes you a smart gardener. To get your soil test kit, go to mysoilsavvy.com.
Worried about watering too much or too little? Tree diaper technology is the best way to stabilize your soil moisture in your garden, trees, or houseplants. Use coupon code GARDEN15 to save 15% off at treediaper.com. The Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show is brought to you by the following: Chapin Manufacturing Incorporated, Aqua-Mart, Soil Savvy, Wind River Chimes, Wisconsin Greenhouse Company, Pro Plugger, Deer Defeat, Dripping Springs Oyas, Phylum Bioproducts. Find all sponsors at the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com and thank them for their support. Welcome back to the Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show. The Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show. Jesse Frost moments away, but first, Rise Gardens.
Rise Gardens is a revolutionary hydroponic gardening system for your home. Instead of food traveling hundreds or even over 1,000 miles before it hits your plate, harvest the veggies and herbs and greens you need for dinner in the comfort of your own home. No green thumb required knowledge, gardening made easy with the Rise Gardens app. Step-by-step guidance from seed to harvest, a complete garden on a shelf, and comes with everything you need to grow healthy and the freshest food for you and your loved ones. Fully customize your garden to your needs and preferences. For more information and to get your Rise Garden, visit risegardens.com.
Holly, let's go to the hotline and bring in our guest for this week.
Jesse Frost is a farmer, gardener, author, and podcast host. He is the creator of the No-Till Growers Network. His book is The Living Soil Handbook. He is the host of the No-Till Market Garden podcast, and he resides in Kentucky. Welcome to the program, Jesse.
Thank you. Thank you all for having me.
Well, let's jump right into it. What is the No-Till Grow Network?
Yeah, so the No-Till Growers Network is kind of an extension of notillgrowers.com, which is a website we started several years ago to be a sort of hub for collecting information that farmers needed about how to grow more ecologically, more sustainably, and without tillage. So the network is our podcast side that is where we put all of our podcasts, all of our very niche podcasts, I should say. So such as the Composter podcast, the Winter Growers podcast, and et cetera. So, it's kind of just, we dig into the nitty gritty details on everything and, try to explore ideas that maybe, aren't always out there because they're so niche.
Okay, fantastic. So tilling is common in so many ways of growing. Why no-till? And why no-till?
Yeah, so you're right. Tilling is in many ways, it's in many forms of agriculture. I learned to grow with tillage myself. we have to just kind of look at what tillage does to the soil. So when you run a tiller through a garden bed or through a farm, what you're doing is you're whipping in a lot of oxygen into the soil, and you are breaking up a lot of soil aggregates, so little collections of soil organic matter. And when you whip in all that oxygen, a lot of, you know, oxygen-loving bacteria get really excited about that, and they start consuming a lot of your soil organic matter. Soil organic matter is really important. It holds moisture when it's dry. It releases moisture when it's too wet. It acts as food for microorganisms that then in turn feeds the plants. So when you release, you know, when you kind of enliven these oxygen-loving bacteria, they consume all that soil organic matter and release it as CO2 into the atmosphere. So without plants above them to recollect that CO2 and put it back into the soil, like, and through photosynthesis, without that happening, you lose all of that to the atmosphere, and effectively your soil gets depleted. Now, it also becomes more susceptible to wind and rain and sun exposure and all the erosion that can occur there. And it also, you know, tillage break kills your earthworms and a lot of your arthropods and those sorts of things that you need. And you know, it also brings up a bunch of weed seeds. So although there is an ecological side to not tilling, there's also just a practical side. I know that when I was learning to farm, I spent a lot of time cultivating, and that's not exactly the most fun thing to do. And I would work until dark doing it. And now, 5, 6, 7 years into not tilling at all on our farm, we don't ever do that. I don't work past 3 or 4 p.m. And it's wonderful. So there is also that side, and the food is good. You know, the food responds better to the soil. We hold our moisture better, and you know, that's the sort of practices that we want other people to employ, because we don't want farming to be something that, you know, takes all of your time and your energy and hurts your back and all of these things. We want it to be something fun, something that basically anybody can do. So that's one of the why we focus so much on this idea of not tilling.
Now, I'll tell the story back years ago when I grew up on a large, big ag farm in southern Illinois. The extension agencies and all those people that were they'd tell the farmers, here's what's best to do. They would inform the farmers, you can no-till, but only for 7 years, and then you've got to till the soil in order to because there's going to be so much compaction, nothing's going to grow. Obviously, this is a different type of mindset nowadays.
Right. And it's also a different approach, because there are, you know, a lot of the bigger style of no-till involves chemical usage. Right. And you end up with this sort of what they call like a stratification, if you can imagine, just like layers of plant matter. And it does actually get compacted, because you're also using a lot of tractors. So if you're not growing plants year round, which is another big part of what we do, like cover cropping, then yeah, it can end up in a negative situation if you're, you know, using chemicals to terminate crops and you're not tilling it. But it's
and you've got dead soil. You don't have any life in the soil when you're going that route as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that life is everything to your plants. You know, that life releases all the nutrients for your plants to consume and grow from.
Absolutely. Now tell us more about your book, The Living Soil Handbook. If somebody were to pick up a copy, what could they expect, or what would pique their interest, or just tell us more about it?
Yeah, one of the things about this style of growing is that there's so many different ways to do it. So what I wanted to do was not create exactly a choose your own adventure, although I loved those as a child. I wanted to create something that would give you not just like, this is how I do things on my farm, but this is how plants work. This is how soil works. And here's some many different ways that you can, employ that. You know, employ things like photosynthesis and, mulches and all of the things that come along with no-till growing, depending on what your context is, what you have available to you. So the idea being, I just wanted people to be able to pick up the book and go, oh, I can use these things, and maybe these other things I can't use, but all of this will lead to healthier soil, healthier plants, and, you know, just an easier work environment.
Knowledge. That's what your book is, knowledge. What can we do that's as effective or more effective, but is easier on the farmer or grower themselves?
Yeah. So is that the question?
That was just a point that, you know, that we want to have the same or better impact and let nature work with us, then fight against it and then try to make it easier on us as the gardener, as the farmer.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that a really good example of that is something like weeds. We think of weeds as these things that are, you know, trouble in the garden, but really they're nature telling us that it needs photosynthesis, right? It's like emergency solar panels popping up and saying, like, we need photosynthesis. And if you're not going to do it for us, we'll do it ourselves. So you know, those little signs, the things that we're always fighting, are actually nature just giving us hints as to what we should be doing, keeping it covered and keeping it planted as much as possible.
Now, you're the host of the podcast of the No-Till Growers Network. And what has been one of the most beneficial things that you have learned when interviewing people for your podcast?
Yeah, and I should say that I've stepped back a little bit from hosting. So we have four new hosts, or three new hosts, technically. And I still assist with that, but I did it for five seasons. And I learned a ton. One of the biggest things that I learned was just how critical it is to, you know, appreciate context, that a farm in, you know, Kentucky, where I am, is very different from a farm out in California. And both of those farms are very different from farms up in Canada versus farms down in Sandy, Florida. So context is very critical and in many different ways. And I was really blown away with how many different ways there are to do this style of farming based on your context, what materials you have available. Maybe you don't have, abundant, you know, straw there, but maybe you have abundant compost, or maybe you don't have compost or straw or hay that you can trust and you have to use cover crops. There's so many different ways to do it. And I think that was one of the exciting things for me, is to learn just how many different ways people are doing it and people can do it.
Well, when you say about sources you can't trust, you're referring to they've got chemical based on them and you just don't know the source, or what do you refer to that being?
Sure. Yeah, that's an important clarification, because there are not all compost is created equal. We are finding a lot of persistent herbicides. There's been an enormous PFAS, forever chemical issue up in Maine and elsewhere. There are, you know, with hay, you end up, some growers will spray broadleaf herbicides on their hay. And those broadleaf herbicides, obviously, we grow a lot of broadleaf plants in a garden. So we don't necessarily want that hay up against our plants. Same thing with first straw. So there are all these little nuances to these materials that, maybe weren't as big of an issue or weren't as obvious of an issue, but now that we're using them in bulk, you know, hay and straw and compost and those sorts of things, wood chips, we do have to take a little bit more consideration into how it was produced and if it was treated at all before we put it around our plants.
And with these chemicals, they are grown, the plants are sprayed, the animals consume it, kick it out the back end, turn it into compost, and it's still active. It's that strong.
Yeah, and there's many reasons for that. Sometimes, yes, they aren't. They're, you know, a lot of these chemicals are built to not be broken down by water, and so so they're not water soluble. So they end up just staying there for a very long time. They're intentionally difficult to break down. And same with the PFAS chemicals. Like, their whole thing is that they're in a lot of waterproofing and fireproofing. So their whole thing is resistance to decomposition. So even in really good compost scenarios, you can end up with some of these chemicals getting through. And we have friends who've lost many crops to that, you know, to persistent herbicides inside of their compost, which is also really hard to test for and very unfortunate. But composters are doing, I should say, like, just if you're worried about that, talk to the composter and see what they do to mitigate that issue. That's the biggest tip I can give you, because the good ones will tell you they take it very seriously.
Right. And the ones that they don't want to tell you, don't buy from them.
Yeah. Or maybe they don't know.
Don't
know, that's another red flag, because they may not even be aware of it.
True.
Okay. So if people want to switch to no-till, is it pretty easy and straightforward? Are there any tips or tricks, things for them to keep in mind before they take that plunge?
Yeah, I would do some research and start small. Like if you have a system that works relatively well for you, like if you till your garden and you've got your weeds situation figured out, stick with that for now and then just start some different no-till trials and see what works in your system and look around. I go through a lot of that in the handbook too, just you know, the different ways to transition to no-till. But I think the biggest thing is start small. Just try a couple different things, maybe try a bed or two, try a couple crops and just see if you liked the production, see if it worked for you. Take all the different things into consideration. Because one of the biggest mistakes you could make is going full tilt and then not having a successful year because maybe the compost wasn't very good that you used, or you used a really cold mulch in a really cold place. So like lighter colored mulches, oftentimes people put them down in really cold places, and that just really cools your soil. So you're, you know, summer loving, heat loving crops don't do as well. So those, you know, those little nuances are important. So I think starting small is the biggest tip.
Well, with all of your experience in growing no-till, have you had something now you look back on going, I can't believe I did that. That was a total mistake. I should have knew better.
Oh, that's every day for me.
Okay.
No, I do so many different things on our farm because we run no-till growers. I try experiment all the time. And the biggest thing is as long as you're meeting the basic needs of the plant, it needs water, it needs sunlight. As long as you're getting those things done, most crops will succeed. You know, but you do want to address compaction. That's a big one, is assuming that, you know, putting compost over really compacted soil that the crops will do well because there's so much compost. That's not necessarily the case. Sometimes you do have to maybe lightly broad fork just to open up the soil a little bit. There's little nuances to it that I think are that, you know, have taken me a little while to accept and to learn. That's the biggest thing, I think.
And broad forking, for those who are not familiar, that's not a tillage. That is just simply allowing cavities to be placed in the soil for water and air to get down in order to loosen a little bit of the compaction.
Right, correct. It's like you can imagine like a large digging fork, and you just lightly pull it back, and you just kind of pop the soil just a little bit, just enough to get some oxygen, some air down there, and then also some of that compost that maybe you have on the surface can kind of fall into those cracks and fill it in a little bit, and that'll act as plant food and help, you know, break up that compaction, because compaction is one of the hardest things on plants. You can imagine, you know, a plant root trying to break through concrete, it's going to take a while. So you want to sort of, at least in the first couple of years, sort of address that. And then you won't have to after a while. And you know, it can be a little bit of a gradual uptake with no-till. Like I said, every context is everything. And if your context is really compacted soil, you may have to address that.
And in a backyard garden, you can have distinct grow areas and permanent walk paths, so you're not dealing with the level of compaction that you would have when you did quote unquote traditional gardening.
Sure. Yeah. And that way also you can control where your paths are and where your beds are. We do that on our farm, even though we grow on roughly an acre, our beds stay in the same place year after year and our pathways stay in the same place year after year. And I talk about those things in the book too, just especially just pathway management is underappreciated. It's a very important part of this whole thing because you have your, you know, bare pathways, you have wood chips. We use a lot of living pathways. So there are living plants in the pathway. So those things are, you know, all have to be taken into consideration. But yeah, that not stepping, not, you know, keeping your beds in the same place means that they're not getting stepped on, not getting walked on, not being compacted.
Fantastic. Well, we've really enjoyed having you on the program today. How can people find out more about you and your great information and your book and all of that?
Yeah, you can find more information at notillgrowers.com. And I always recommend people start with the YouTube channel. We, you know, do a lot of informational videos there that are very specific, but also kind of some of the broader stuff that gets you into no-till and kind of understanding how it works. And that's, you know, just can look up No-Till Growers on YouTube. That's a great way to find us.
Well, Jesse, we greatly appreciate the time you've offered and the knowledge you've shared with Holly, myself, and all of our listeners. We thank you for that.
Well, and thank you all so much for having me on.
Absolutely. And when we come back, it's going to be Your Garden Questions, Our Garden Answers. You're tuned in to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show.
Have a garden question? Give Joey and Holly a call now or anytime 24/7. Just dial 1-800-927-SHOW. If you can't get through, leave a message and they will call you back. Call now 1-800-927-SHOW.
Head into Fleet Farm where you'll find everything you need. From tires to tree stands, drills to dog food, toys to tools, they've got it all. You can save even more at Fleet Farm when you join the Fleet Rewards loyalty program. You get exclusive offers and it's free to sign up. Get everything you need at a low fleet price. Shop in store or online today at Fleet Farm. Pomona's Universal Pectin is a high-quality pectin that gels reliably with low amounts of any sweetener. If you're trying to reduce the amount of sugar in your diet, you'll love Pomona's Universal Pectin. Now you can make healthy homemade jams and jellies sweetened to your taste. You can use sugar or honey to sweeten. Pomona's Universal Pectin keeps indefinitely when stored in an airtight container. Easy to use, versatile, and comes with directions and recipes in every box. Find out more and where to buy at PomonaPectin.com. Also available at natural food stores and online.
Tree Hugger sprinklers are the ultimate watering device for either your newly planted or established trees and shrubs. Our sprinklers open and close around the trunk of your tree and provide 360 degrees of watering. With our adjustable valve, you can direct the water to your tree's targeted saturation zone. They come in three sizes, 7, 11, and 15 inches. You can purchase a Tree Hugger sprinkler at your local garden center, feed store, or hardware store. Go to treehuggersprinklers.com to find a retailer close to you. Or you can buy it directly from Amazon or treehuggersprinklers.com. If you're an independent nursery, garden center, hardware store, or feed store, you will want to stock this product. Contact the good people at Tree Hugger Sprinklers and they will get you set up. Your tree's best friend. TreeHuggerSprinklers.com.
Get ready for winter with Chapin Home and Garden Products. Weed, feed, and seed your lawn with Chapin turf spreaders before the snow flies. Have a salt spreader ready to go for keeping walkways and driveways clear of ice. And make sure you have sprayers handy for cleaning, disinfecting, and watering indoor plants. Chapin products are available at major home improvement hardware retailers, online retailers, and at ChapinMFG.com.
The Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show is brought to you by the following. Happy Leaf LED, Root Maker, Jung Seeds, Tree Hugger Sprinklers, Verlo Mattresses, Farmer's Defense, Pomona Universal Pectin, Natural Green Products, Mantis Tillers. Find all sponsors at thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com and thank them for their support. Welcome back to the Garden with Joy and Holly radio show. Thank you for being with us today. Time for garden questions and answers. You got a question? We got an answer. Send it on over to gardentalkradio@gmail.com. gardentalkradio@gmail.com. Or you can give us a call toll free coast to coast at 1-800-927-SHOW. That's 1-800-927-7469. This question is sponsored by Fleet Farm and fleetfarm.com.
So it's a compost question that they had after listening to us on the Roar of the Rockies. KHNC 1360 AM in Colorado.
Yep.
How about the grain byproducts from brew pubs for the compost? Too much alcohol left behind for the compost? So basically, they want to take brewery grains and use them in the compost, and that's perfectly fine. Some people do feed them to livestock.
Correct. It's called corn gluten from like the big breweries.
Yeah.
They will take all the goody out of the corn, crush it down into pellet form, and then it's a supplement that you mix in with your corn and your other minerals and supplements for your cattle feed. We only use it for cattle feed. I don't know if you could use it for pork or hogs or sheep or whatever, but we used it for cattle. But continue.
Right. So
I mean, it was dry. It was a dust form. They mixed it with molasses in order to bind it together.
Well, this is probably not that exactly.
Correct. Right.
But it's from the brew pubs. And yeah, you can add to your compost. It is considered a nitrogen. So it's high in green matter, similar like grass clippings, leaf matter, straw, things like that. But you can add it to your compost.
and mix it in. Don't overdo it. I mean, obviously, in proportional measures, but you can certainly do that. And I'm sure that if you are interested in finding the brew pub products for, you know, composting, there's a lot of breweries. Just ask, and they will want probably to get rid of the stuff because they can only use so much of it.
It's one of those free resources like coffee grounds that you can get from coffee shops, and I'm sure there's other free resources as well. But yeah.
Okay, next question here is, how is the best way to leave the garden over winter? Well, there's a couple of different answers to this. One, you can walk away from it. Or two, some people will cleanse the garden and top the raised beds off with compost and see you next spring. We would lean towards the first, is leave the garden as is. Now, if you're like us, and some of you aren't and some of you are, when I say like us, we've weeded and weeded and weeded and it looks like a pasture in our raised beds. At this point of the year, things have already seeded, and you're not going to prevent any more seed from falling. It's already established. Leave it there for the insects. Leave it there for the birds. Just let it be. If you feel the need to remove the weeds because they may be easy to pull now because they're tall, you can certainly do that, and you can cover the soil with your leaves that are coming down from the trees. Or if you have to get additional leaves from the street, if you're in a municipality that puts leaves on the street, you can go out and get them. We've done it before. And cover the soil. The key is to cover the soil. Anything in nature that we have seen in the world covers the soil. If there's a bare area, weeds will grow. The only place this is not the rule is in a desert. But in the forest floor, in pastures, in fields that lay fallow, weeds begin to come up in order to cover the soil, to protect the soil. You've looked at the difference between an area that has been covered all winter versus an area that has been exposed. There is a tremendous difference. The area that has been exposed is very dead-looking, very plain, very weathered. If you look at the area that has been covered, you remove the leaves or lift up the grass clippings and the mulch or the straw. There is activity very rapid underneath there. There's worms and there's bugs and there's insects. It has created a habitat for these things as well as protecting the soil. So that is the answer for leave it in, or leave it alone, or cleanse it. We don't till. Some people choose to cover their garden with leaves and then till them under. That is not something that we would advise to. You're not a bad person if you do such, but we see the advantage to just letting things set and then planting with very minimal soil disturbance if at possible.
Absolutely. So the next question is I want to overwinter mums inside, but they only have buds now. Should I put them in the dark, cool place now or wait until they bloom inside and then store them?
Well, you'd want to let them bloom outside, first of all.
Yeah,
you don't want to take and hide them.
No, that's the point of having mums.
Right, to have them.
Yeah.
So you can do this. Let's say you're in hardiness zone 5. Mums are generally hardy down to 4 and 5. So many of our listeners can do such. And bring them in if the temperatures are going to be below 32 degrees Fahrenheit. If you want them to bloom inside, put them near a sunny window and keep them watered. After they bloom, remove the flowers, but leave 2 or 3 inches of the stem to produce a crown to overwinter inside, and they can store them. You can store them in a cool, frost-free location till spring. Water about once a month. Now, here's the thing. Enough to keep them alive, but too much water will cause them to rot. That's the problem that a lot of people get in. Once a month is all you need. It may take a little time, a little later in the garden to plant them, but in the spring you can plant them in a well-drained area in full sun, and you can have mums alive, and you don't have to buy them next year. There you go. Okay. I have a 10 by 10 garden with good-looking soil. Want to grow tomatoes in it, and there's no real place to rotate crops. Many people suggest you should rotate your crops. What can I do to the soil, fertilize it or something else this fall or next spring in order to get the rotation or make it so it's less chance since I can't rotate? You can put nitrogen fixing a cover crop on it this fall. If it's not too late, it may be too late where you're at. That would help replenish the lost nutrients. Not rotating the crops can increase the likelihood of repeat diseases and pests. So if you're in a 10... Yes.
You could rotate the crops.
Well, 10 by 10 is very small. But yes, you could take from upper right and move it to lower left.
Unless there's like a lighting situation.
Yes.
Type of thing. But if you could even just move them over...
Three foot. A couple rows.
Yeah. That would be ideal too. It's not... Crop rotation can be done on a small scale. Somebody who grew up with a very urban garden, mm-hmm. we didn't always plant the tomatoes in the same row every year. We would move them over. So you can kind of shift things around as you need to.
But whatever problems you had this year, whether that be fill in the blank, you got to be aware of it next year and be on top of it. Be proactive instead of reactive with the problems that you may be persistent in the soil that were this year because you can't move it, you know, 30 feet that way or 25 feet the other way. So it can be done. You can rotate on a very small level. I would add a couple inches of compost to start with right now. Let that work. Don't work it in. Just put 2 or 3 inches of compost on top of your 10 by 10 bed. Let it set until spring. Then plant in different areas of that raised bed, from what you had this year. So with that being said, we are out of time, and we thank you for yours. Miss any portion of the program today or would like to revisit it? Hey, you can do that by going to your favorite podcast platform and searching the Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show or our parent website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com, underneath the Season 7 tab at the top of the page. Or you can send us an email, and we'll send you a link to the show. That email is gardentalkradio@gmail.com. Next week is our final episode of Season 7. We're going to have some fun. We're going to talk, it's like the last day of school type of thing. We're going to go over some fun facts about life that you may not have been aware of, not garden-related at all, as well as who are Holly and myself outside of the gardening realm. I'm going to tell you a little bit about us.
I like the mystery, though.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And we do have a garden expert, author Heather Holm, will be with us. And we will have some thank yous to dish out. So until next week for our final episode, I'm Joy Baird.
I'm Holly Baird.
And we will see you in the garden.